Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. Eleanor Cohn and Bessie Hyman are in a second interview with Margaret Lipson on April 30th, 1976. Margaret, are there any things that you would like to add from our last interview before we go on?
Yes, you asked me some questions that I didn't have the specific answers for last time, and I have since gotten them. You asked me exact dates for the birth of my parents and my father. Nathan was born April 14th. Oh, that's wrong. He died April 14th, 1945. And my mother, Rose, died October 26th, 1941. My father was born in 1874 in Hungary, and my mother, Rose, whose maiden name was Klein, was born in Hungary in 1877. And another thing that I didn't have for you last time, I did tell you that we came to this country in 1914, March 1914, and we came on the Red Star Line. We left Antwerp, Belgium, and on the ship called the Lapland. Another thing that I think you asked me, and I really didn't, I gave you some information, but I really omitted a very important thing in our home when I was growing up. I suggested in part that Jewish men who came to our town to work, bachelors, were always welcome at our home, in fact invited to our home for holiday meals and so on. But there was another kind of person who always was welcome in our home, and I used to wonder when I was young how it happened that they always knew where to come. And these were these bearded gentlemen who came to solicit funds in the small towns. They always seemed to come to our house. They must have had some sort of an association where they told each other where you were supposed to go. And if they stayed overnight, they stayed in our town, they stayed at our house, they had their meals at our house. And further than that, my father used to go with them to all the Jewish households in the town. And one time I remember I was so angry. I guess I was a feminist way back when I was very young, because I remember one time I was so infuriated because one of these bearded gentlemen, they were all very orthodox, of course, and you know the position of women as far as Orthodox Judaism goes, I remember one time I was so angry because one of these gentlemen who was eating at our house and stayed overnight wouldn't pass by my mother in the kitchen because, you know, he wouldn't go past her. This was forbidden, I suppose. And I remember I was so angry that I said to my father, "I don't understand this. Mother's good enough to cook for him, but he won't go past her as though she'd contaminate him if he went by." And another thing that had a great influence on me in my adult life, my father always not only believed in, but he really acted upon it. He believed that you had to help your fellow man. And, of course, this business of taking these men around to help them with their solicitation was just one kind of thing. But he really had a great feeling for helping his fellow man. And, you know, when we came over to this country, shortly after that, World War I began, and you really couldn't write to Hungary. But as soon as the war was over, he continued his correspondence with rabbis there and family, and I remember he continued to send money all the time. We really didn't have very much money to spare at any time when I was growing up, but what we did have, he would send something all the time. And I remember one time that he got a letter from some relative or friend in which he said that he was in such desperate straits, and he had three daughters, and he wanted to marry them off, and he really needed a dowry for them, and couldn't Nachman, my father, help him out and send him some money so that he'd have dowry for his daughters. And my father did send him something, and in fact went to some of his friends to ask if they wouldn't like to join him in sending money to this poor, desperate man who needed dowry for his daughters. But I really was brought up in a home where they believed in doing for the community and in helping. A little more about the town in which I grew up, that I since last time gotten together my thoughts and some facts too. I told you that the town was comparatively a newly settled town when we came there in 1914, and I have since checked a little bit and found that the town was apparently established around 1908 or 1909, and their first school superintendent was elected in 1910. So, you know, the town was pretty young when we moved there in 1914. And it was a one industry town, J&L Steel Company. That was the industry. And they ruled the town in every way. I think I told you a little about that the last time, so I won't go into that. The housing in the town, I don't know if I mentioned this, they had built what we know now as company houses. Did I tell you about that? Yeah, well, the houses were built by most of them. Well, I suppose the first houses were all built by J&L. And the workers in the mill lived in them. They paid rent to J&L. After a number of years, they bought the houses, and then they were sold again, and I know that where we lived up in Plan 12, the whole town was laid out in plans, and we had moved. The last place we lived was on Plan 12. I know that there were all these houses very similarly built, and they had been built, I think, by J&L, but they were, almost all of them were sold to the workers, and then the workers, for one reason or other at different times, resold them. And I remember one Jewish family who had grocery stores in the town had also bought up a lot of this real estate. The J&L also had what we called a company store. You know about that, and we really had a company store. It was a little department store, and there too the workers bought and charged, and this was all, you know, taken off their pay. And just what you read about the early history of workers in mills and coal mines, it really existed there. I said something a little while ago too about being a feminist from way back, and as I was trying to think back over things that I might give you for background in the town and about myself and the way I was brought up, another little incident came to mind. When I was a sophomore in high school and was taking geometry, one day I have test paper returned to me. My teacher was a man, a red-haired young man named Mr. Stringer, and he returned test papers, and I looked at mine, and interestingly enough, I've even saved it. I looked at mine, and I looked at it, and without stopping to think, I became so infuriated. I stamped up to his desk. I remember that he, so distinctly, he was sitting there behind his desk. He returned these papers and waiting for us, you know, to look at them and finish with them, and then I suppose he was going to go ahead with class. So all unsuspectingly, the poor man just sat there behind his desk, and here stamped up this little girl. I was a skinny little thing. I must have weighed about 90 pounds then. And I said, "How dare you write this on my test paper? What do you mean that I think like a man? I think like me. I think like a girl. I think like a woman. Do you mean to tell me that women can't think?" And I guess in spite of the fact that I was furious from a feminist point of view, I must have been pleased anyway, because I see that I saved that part of the test paper. You see what it says here. "Your work is excellent. A." And then he wrote, "I fear that your reasoning will surpass that of a man, and men want to be thought that they are the reasoners." Well,
thought he was doing you a big favor.
Yeah, and this infuriated me that he would think that this was high praise, that I think like a man, as if women couldn't think. So, you know, when I say to women, to the young women, the women's libbers, and that I was really a women's libber, except that I didn't consider myself that long before they were born, it was true. I was. Another thing that I think kind of indicated the way in our home, I'm going to answer. I told my, my parents always encouraged me to do things. They, I guess in a way, sometimes went too far the other way in making me think I could do everything and do so much. For example, I remember when I was a freshman in high school, this is just an example of the way they really did encourage me. I remember coming home from school one day and saying to my parents, there's a literary team in the high school, and every year this team competes with other high schools in the Beaver Valley, and they're having tryouts now for that. And I just don't know, my elocution teacher, public speaking teacher, suggested maybe I'd like to try out for something, although she did tell me that freshmen have never been chosen for it, but still she thought it might be a good experience. "But what do you think?" So my mother said, "Well, what do you have to do? What are the things you do? What does the team do?" And I said, "Well, we have a declaimer, we have debaters, we have orator, we have an extemporaneous speaker." So my mother said, "Well, which of these would you think of doing if you did it?" And I said, "Well, declaimer, I think I could do. I might, but I said, I really don't think I should, because I'll never make it. They never take a freshman, I'll just never make it." And she said, "Is somebody going to be chosen?" And I said, "Yes, of course somebody's going to be chosen." She said, "Well, then why shouldn't it be you?" And this really was typical of the way they did all the time. If anybody can do it, you can do it. And why should you be 10th in the class when you can be first? You be first all the time. And I don't know how good or bad that was, but it did do something to me, and I know it did. Well, now, what else do you want me to tell you?
Let us go back to your courtship. That's where we stopped the last time.
Oh, yes, I remember we stopped, because I really was very reluctant to say anything. You wouldn't think from the way I've been talking so freely, that I am really a private person.
You did tell us that you met Sylvan, your husband.
Yes, at Pitt.
What was his full name, and when was he born?
His full name was Sylvan. He did not have a middle name, nor did I. And he was born October 3rd, 1908. He was 3 months older than I. In Pittsburgh. He really was a Pittsburgher.
Tell me something about your courtship and your marriage.
Well, I had come to Pitt in the fall of 1926. I had been offered a scholarship at Geneva College down there in Beaver, but my parents and I decided that I ought to come to the city to school instead of another little town. And Sylvan was already at Pitt. I met him when I was a freshman. I really met him right away, almost. And I remember going with him to a rehearsal of the Temple Players. We went out. I remember one of the places we went, which was a special occasion. We'd go dancing at Webster Hall in the Georgian Room on a Friday night or a Saturday night. I don't know what else to tell you.
When did you marry him?
I married him in 1935. I graduated from Pitt in 1930, he in 1929, and then he went to law school, and we went together, as Sylvan used to say. He went with the wrong woman for 7 years, and in 1935 we were married.
How many children did you have?
Three.
When were they, what are their names, and when were they born?
Franklin was born. He's the only one in our family who has a middle name, and that was because I did want him to be named for my grandfather, who was Baruch, which, as you know, means blessed, and so his middle name is Bennett. But then Franklin Roosevelt was our dearly beloved president in our family anyway, and so he had to be Franklin. My father searched through the whatever to get the Hebrew name, and he came up with Ephraim, so it's really Ephraim, I guess, in the translation. So Franklin Bennett Libson was born in 1939. Robert, my mother had died just before, and well, a couple of years before, and Robert was born in 1943, and he was named for my mother, whose name, as I told you, was Rachel in Yiddish, and so my father came up with Rachmiel, which is a valid name, a masculine name, and close enough to Rachel, so Rachmiel. And Nancy, the youngest, was born after my father died. His name was Nachman, and she's Nachuma, and translated it was Nancy, because that's the name that Franklin picked, because he used to enjoy the Nancy and Sluggo comics. So he picked Nancy, and that was all right. She was born in 1947, 4 years difference between each two children. And as Sylvan used to say, and I guess I'm going to be sorry I said this too, I'll be telling you, I would like to expunge that. He used to say, oh yes, we had one every 4 years, whether we knew it or not.
Do you want to just briefly tell me what they each do? What each of
the children?
Yes. Just mention their vocation.
Franklin is a CPA. As a matter of fact, today is his last day, his job with Pete Marwick Mitchell. He's going to business for himself. And Robert is really an attorney. He passed his bar exams both in New York State and in Pennsylvania, but he's not a practicing attorney. He's with Presidential Realty Company in New York. He's vice president of development, I guess is his title. And Nancy is with the National Center for Housing Management in Washington, D.C.
Where did you live when you were first married?
We lived in Pittsburgh.
Where?
Our first apartment was on Center Avenue. I think it was called Tudor Hall. Would that be right? right across from Devonshire there. And our second apartment the year later was on Hempstead Road. And we lived there for 3 years. And then when just before Franklin was born, we moved to a house next in that little row next to Whiteman School on Solway Street. And we lived there till 1945 when we bought this house, and we've been here ever since. I taught, that's one thing we skipped. I taught school in Aliquippa. I think I did tell you about getting the job in Aliquippa, didn't I?
Yes, I was just going on to ask about various occupations that you have had. Do you want to start from the beginning?
All right. I think I told you the last time that I started to teach in Aliquippa before just as my last semester at Pitt started, that I went there and did my practice teaching so that I could really, when the land settlers went out west and they
staked
their claims. Okay, I went to, as I told you last time, I did my practice teaching in a position in the English department in Aliquippa, Woodlawn High School it was still then. So that I'd be sure to get that job in the fall because the teacher was leaving, and if I didn't get there, they'd give the job to someone else, and that would be that, because it was a depression and jobs were hard to come by. So I started in Aliquippa. That was 1930, January 1930, and I taught there until January 1939. I taught there till just 3 months before, 2.5 months, I guess, before Franklin was born. And I took leave of absence for one semester, and I went back to teaching there in the very next fall. Franklin was 5 months old. And then I taught until just a couple months before Robert was born, which was 1943. And again, I got a leave of absence, but this time when I heard after, I was still on leave of absence, and it was about a year and a half later, and one of my fellow teachers from Aliquippa told me that they had never replaced me, that they had another teacher whom I knew, another woman, in my position, and were saying to her that they couldn't give her the job because it was still mine, I was on leave. And of course this was a very good excuse on their part, because as a substitute they didn't have to pay her as much as they would have otherwise. Not that they were paying so very much, salaries were a disgrace. When I heard that, I wrote a letter and said that I was resigning and the position was then open. I really didn't want to go back. I wanted to go back, but I really thought I should not with two children. I just didn't feel that I should leave them with I had a wonderful housekeeper, no question about that. She was wonderful. She had been a Jewish refugee, same age as I was, and she was just wonderful. But I still didn't feel it was right to leave two children with her while I went back to teaching again. And I want to tell you, I really missed teaching. I loved it. And suddenly, one day, it was 2 years after, 2 years after I had stopped teaching that second time, it suddenly dawned on me that evening that it was the first day since I had stopped teaching in 1943 that I really and truly hadn't thought about it, hadn't missed it, and I just loved it. And so I didn't go back then until 1963. And then I got a job here in Pittsburgh. And when I retired again in 1971, somebody again asked me, well, do you miss it? How do you feel about it? Well, not just one person, but several people said, don't you miss it? What are you doing? And I said, yeah, I missed it. I missed it when I stopped for just about 1 minute, and that's all.
Where did you teach?
At Gladstone High School.
And what did you teach?
English. I had the seniors. And certainly was different from the first time I taught, but let's not go into that.
Can you tell me something about your social life when you were married?
Well, what shall I say? The usual social life of a Jewish couple in Squirrel Hill.
Which is what?
Except that, well, I must say, we never had a great many friends. We had a few, and we had some good friends. And our social life with them was we had them for dinner parties, and we went to their homes for dinner parties. We did not belong to a country club. It was only when, when the children were in high school, the boys, and Pitt owned Wildwood, if you will recall. Wildwood Golf Club was first owned by the University of Pittsburgh, and they opened membership to alumni as well as to their professors. And Robert had started to golf, and he liked it very much. He's kind of, when he goes in for something, he really goes in for it. And I thought Sylvan ought to start to play too. He had a very bad back condition, but I really thought this would be good for him. I thought he ought to play. He always liked sports, but he was not a participating sportsman. He was a sports watcher. But I really thought he'd like that, and of course I wanted Robert to have a place to golf, and then they had a swimming pool, and I wanted all of them to be able to go to a swimming pool. And so I said, Sylvan, you know, it's really not very expensive, golf, the membership, with Pitt owning it. Let's join. We did. And Sylvan always said it was the best thing he did as far as his back was concerned, because it was very, very good for him, and he loved golf. He just loved it. And Robert, too, and the children liked going there, the swimming pool and so on. Well,
did you take family vacations?
We decided when Nancy was 2.5 years old that we really sat down, talked it over, all of us. Even Nancy was in on it, although she, I'm sure, had nothing much to say about it. But we talked it over, and we decided that rather than send the children off to camp, as they called it, overnight camp,